The Guardian. Football Weekly.
Football Weekly. High above a globe gripped by fresh cricketing scandal, the pod says no balls, spot fixing. Cristiano Ronaldo got over these problems. Why can't cricketers? Anyway, football. The Premier League weekend. Blackpool don't need a pen, they use Fulham's pencil. While at Bolton, Yussi comes off too early because he slapped his Johnson. Meanwhile, check out these authentic footballing brains. Theo Walcott proves key in Arsenal win at Blackburn, while Big Barry G produces spooky Wigan at White Hart Lane win prediction. There's all the latest news from the Premier League, including Man City's loss at Sunderland, and then it's on to Europe. In Spain, Mourinho's off to a poor start, while Ibrahimovic is just off. We look at the Swede's Milan transfer and why he didn't have Pep talks. There's the start of the Italian season. Milan get off to a fly, Juve slump, and before a ball's been kicked, there's the first coaching casualty of the campaign. Raphael Honigstein adds some gravity to our near-Earth orbit conditions with his Bundesliga news roundup. Not going well there for Steve McClaren. Plus, we get the latest from the Football League. All of that, unbelievably enough, plus your post in today's Football Weekly. On board World Football Weekly today, we have John Ashton.
Hi.
Hi there. James Dart.
Hello, James.
And Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Guten Morgen and Tag and stuff. Yeah. Off we go then. Let's start with the day that Spurs fans discovered that it's not all sweetness with Harry. Yes, I'm talking about White Hart Lane. The Wigan win, John Ashton.
White hot fury from Harry Redknapp as well afterwards.
Yeah.
Really, really giving it to the Tottenham fans, trying to put them in their place. Didn't look like a too bad a performance. And
I think Wigan probably deserved it as well.
Ali Al-Habsyeh, was that the difference?
Ali Al-Habsyeh, he played really well in goal, I think. And I mean, Chris Kirkland's been quite poor, I think, this season. And Al-Habsyeh came in. Kirkland has a slight injury, but played very, very well. And they sort of just sort of thwarted the Tottenham forward line and quite comfortably. And I can see why the fans were getting frustrated. But yeah, I mean, Redknapp taking
Well, you can see why they were getting frustrated. No, they're a fantastic start this evening. Wigan had a shocking one. They lost 9-1 there last season, Wigan.
That's true. So, and yeah, they had to refund their travelling fans last season. And this season, only 60 of them turned up. But at least they repaid them with a 1-0 victory.
Well, they certainly did. Raphael, you've got your finger in the air, like you just don't care. But I prefer to think it's because you've got an important point to make.
Well, I don't know about important, but I think it's sort of a classic pattern for a side that just qualified for the Champions League for the first time.
Mm.
They can't, or perhaps not quite yet, condition themselves, ration themselves, play with a sort of right of intensity, because you can't play 100% every time if you play midweek, especially in Europe. And mentally, it's very fatiguing as well. So I think they're going to struggle throughout the season with these kind of games where, you know, just come off of a real high a couple of nights before, and then you're facing Wigan, a side that you've beat really comfortable, a side who are down at the bottom of the table, and you think, you know, with just 50-60%, you're going to be enough. It's going to be enough for you. And of course, it isn't. And many, many teams, certainly in Germany, where you have a lot more fluctuation between the sides that qualify for the Champions League over the last few years, they've experienced exactly the same problem.
Yeah.
And that's why they can't consistently get into the Champions League again, because they have a good season followed by a bad season followed by a good season.
Well, when you've been playing the big names in Europe, like young boys, it must be hard
yes.
to kind of get your brain focused on the Premier League again, James.
Yes, I think Redknapp bemoaned sort of the lack of guile in the team, and I think sort of someone like Luka Modric is a real sort of key absentee. Again, in a game like this where you just need that sort of, I don't know, just a little injection of energy when they look very lethargic after their sort of, what I say, exertions. It was relatively straightforward in midweek. Harry Redknapp had that white-hot fury, and after the game, I don't know if it's an outtake or if it's from live on Sky, but he was being interviewed after the game, and the Sky reporter, I think it was Rob Palmer, accused him of being a wheeler dealer. And Redknapp went off on one and said, "I'm not a fucking wheeler dealer. I'm a football manager."
Right.
And stormed off. Very good. I advise him to seek it out on YouTube.
All right, excellent. The other big surprise probably of the weekend, or maybe it wasn't, and kudos, by the way, to Barry Glendening, who on Thursday said that he fancied Wigan to get something in that game.
He just backs every single long horse, so one every month comes out and we think he's a genius. We see through it.
We do think he's a genius, though. Sunderland Man City, what happened there, John Ashton?
Well, Carlos Tevez missed an absolute sitter.
Oh, yeah.
City failed to take their chances in the first half. They were denied by a couple of amazing saves from Simon Mignolet in the Sunderland goal.
Is that really how you pronounce it, John?
Mignolet.
That's better.
Yeah.
Go with that.
Mignolet.
Yeah.
In the Sunderland
goal. He's from Belgium, you know.
He is, yeah. Particularly the one from Adebayor late on was astonishing.
Yeah.
And then Sunderland got a deserved penalty late in the game and stole the points. I think it's very easy at the moment to flip-flop between thinking City are potential title candidates and a team that are going to struggle outside the top four, because we just simply don't know what their character is yet. And so it's very tempting to sort of take that from whatever their last result was. And we probably need maybe a dozen games to try and sort of see where the season is going. Because they were fantastic against Liverpool last week and looked like a genuine title team. But this week, yeah, again, two of the three games they haven't scored in yet.
That's amazing, isn't it?
And that miss just set the tone for the entire game. It was sort of like in a horse race where...
For anyone who didn't see it, do tell us.
Well, Yaya Toure made a rather impressive break down through the middle of the pitch on the counter, and he timed it so that he pulled the goalkeeper and the last remaining defender out of the game, squared it for Tevez about 12 yards out, and he managed to put it, well over the bar.
Well over the bar.
With the goal very much...
Yawning in front of him, gaping.
Yeah, like... but I mean, exactly. But going back to it, when a horse clips a fence early in a race and it sort of knocks it out of its stride for the rest of the race, and City just didn't seem to recover after this. They had chances, as John said. But I think Yaya Toure had several and Adebayor again. But credit to Sunderland, they really stepped up in the second half, and Al Mohammadi looked quite impressive as well.
Yeah, he did actually. From the limited highlights I saw, here's a couple of interesting numbers. Man City's matchday squad was worth £270 million. Sunderland's matchday squad wasn't. Darren Bent, since he joined, when he's been on the field, he's scored 17 goals for Sunderland against 6 from the rest of the team put together. That's amazing. It's not a very positive bit of statistic, that, for Sunderland, is it?
Well, Darren Bent scores all their goals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is slightly. Although they are apparently interested in the striker ahead of the transfer window slamming.
Nice. Anyone in particular?
I can't think of any names off the top of my head.
I think it was Asamoah Gyan they might have been looking at, I think.
Yeah.
Be interesting.
In other Premier League news, hey, Arsenal win at Blackburn. How long is it since they've won an away game against the Sam Allardyce side? A long, long time. I think they've had one victory in the last 10 years against Sam Allardyce's teams. There was some good news and bad news about this. The good news, well, Theo Walcott, who added further fuel to the notion that he might, after all, have a footballing brain. 4 goals now in 2 games, and a well-taken strike on the weekend.
It actually burst the net.
It did, didn't it?
Did.
Rubbish.
Although it was a weak. It wasn't that good of a net buster. It's probably the worst net buster you might well have ever seen.
Right.
But it was a good finish.
He's probably quite upset. He's such a polite young chap, Theo, isn't he? You do worry about him sometimes. John?
I was just saying, it probably says more about the standard of net than the strike. But it was interesting afterwards. I thought that Wenger described Walcott as a striker in his sort of post-match comments, whereas sort of I guess the perception of him is a winger, and that's certainly how Fabio Capello sees him. Be interesting to see if they could get some sort of striking role out of him for the national side.
Yeah, or indeed for Arsenal, who often, you know...
Well, he does play on that sort of wide of the front three thing.
I suppose so. Fair enough.
All 4 of his goals have come from exactly pretty much the same spot on the pitch as well. If you check out our very fancy shot boards that are available online.
Are we still doing those?
We are. via the heat mapping tool. Very new. Nice
heat
new,
mapping.
Very new developed app that we have with it this year. You can see that he's pretty much scored from the same spot, that inside right channel.
Who's in charge of mapping the heat?
I have no idea.
But I mean, is it done with satellite?
It depends if it's a White Hart Lane and there's all kinds of heat coming out at the moment.
So. Yeah.
It's like a global hypercolour thing, but with a pitch.
But can they be that specific about body temperatures on a pitch somewhere down? Is it a satellite up ahead?
It's just a guy holding up a wet finger.
It might be. I really don't know. Or is there somebody there with a thermal detector in the stands?
I think in this age of austerity, it's the finger.
You don't understand. It's not actually how hot they are, Jimbo.
No, but I'm presuming that in much the same way you would attempt to discover people lost under rubble in an earthquake scenario, you would have some thermal imagery that goes, oh, there's a body there, that as the body tracks up and down the field, then it will therefore register on a screen what they're there for. No?
I think it's more... Well, I don't know. I don't know.
I think it's just a visual thing. You don't need the heat.
You'll still be able to see, even if like someone like Jermaine Defoe is missing in a big match or something.
Right. Anyway, I said good news and bad news. The bad news... Well, Dan Feeney tweeting in saying, apart from Walcott, Arsenal look far from brilliant. Rovers unlucky not to take a point. Ars Technica posting in saying, the positive thing is that Arsenal didn't fold under a lot of pressure in the last 15 minutes. They hustled and defended as a collective. Maybe too early to say, but has Wenger finally got Arsenal playing well without the ball? If we can do that, we won't be bullied by anyone. That would be a big step. Was it a different kind of Arsenal approach yesterday?
No, they've been parking 3 players in front of the defence for most time of last season as well. And it worked well until Fabregas got injured, basically.
Right.
And Van Persie, of course, this is another piece of bad news. He last year held up the ball for them, which made it easier to defend deep. Without him, I think at the moment they're in danger of being a bit of a one-man team with Theo Walcott, and he will eventually not score every single game. So you have to fear for them a little bit.
Robin van Persie took a slight knock on the ankle and shortly afterwards went off. How long is he likely to be out for? Do we know?
2 weeks, I think. It's not a bad 2 weeks for him to be out, what with the internationals and such.
Well, that's true, but it's just... If it's already starting like
but,
that...
It's the problem with Van Persie, isn't it? He'll be out for 2 weeks this time, but then he'll be out for another
exactly,
few weeks later on.
Exactly. I think, I mean, there's no way he's...
You could argue he's been out since since November.
You could, couldn't you? Let's not, though, because we've got to press on. in other Premier League news, Liverpool just about beat West Bromwich Albion. Not an inspiring performance by any means. And lots of posters grumbling about the fact that sights and expectations are being lowered continually on Merseyside. And the move for Konchesky, Paul Konchesky, is touted as a further evidence of that. Would you reckon? Is that a useful signing or one that illustrates the new dimension in which Liverpool are forced to live?
It's probably a bit of both, I would say, just to sit on the fence. It's a player, obviously, that Roy Hodgson knows from Fulham.
Yeah.
They have been having to play Daniel Agger at left-back, who isn't a left-back. But he's not a sort of Champions League player, is he?
I think given that there's talk of Carlton Cole going to Liverpool before the deadline, 6 o'clock tomorrow, that's a measure of the bar. England international Carlton Cole. That's a measure of the bar going down.
Right. Oh, dear. OK, well, how about Raul Morelis? He was impressive in the World Cup, wasn't he? And he's just joined their midfield.
I think he's okay. I'm not
great to twos.
I'm not. Yeah, exactly. I'm not a huge fan of his. I think he's good, but I think it doesn't really add anything new.
Does he take over the Mascherano role? Because that's an idea that he was rejecting.
Of course. I mean, him and Paulsen will both be sitting there, and Lucas Livia will probably be the third man, the third man out. But then there's this idea that Gerrard will play more centrally and deeper under Hodgson. I don't think it's going to work.
Didn't work.
Countless
in that city,
managers have found that he can't play there.
Yeah,
that's why they keep pushing him further forward. So,
well, a week ago they tried that at Man City. I mean, that wasn't the only thing that went wrong at Man City, but that was certainly part of it, wasn't it? So, Chelsea stayed top with a 2-0 win over Stoke. Just the two goals this time for Chelsea. Man United 3-0 over West Ham, and my word, things do look grim. Any glimmer of sunshine for the West Ham faithful?
It's really, really bad. Especially since Avram Grant started talking about debt now. So he's getting the excuses in already. You know, it's like, oh, I'm doomed here. This is a horrible club, but I'll do my best. And
it's just a continuation of last season.
It's like Portsmouth Mark II.
It is, and it gets no better next when the next game. Is it Chelsea, I think, they play next?
Chelsea home, Stoke away, and then Tottenham at home. Yeah.
I think they'll try and throw some money before the deadline day, but it's not looking good at all.
I can't say that I'm too surprised. I must tell you, I've spoken to someone who's in the squad, and he said to me that it took 5 weeks before Avram Grant started talking tactics to them. He just didn't talk to them at all. It's just hovering in the background, trying to look smart.
Is that what Avram Grant, is that his kind of thing, that he's not
actually... Well, that's how he got by at Chelsea, of course, because he just didn't interfere at all, and the team were going well and basically took care of themselves. And it's a policy that can work when you have a very strong team and when you don't have to interfere. But once things don't go according to plan and you do have to make decisions, then usually you're found out.
But what about Portsmouth?
Yeah, they went down.
Well, yeah, but they went down because they got an 11-point penalty.
But they would have gone down regardless.
And arguably, if they hadn't got the... I mean, they were doing well until they got the 11-point penalty and they got through to an FA Cup.
No.
They're bottom of the Championship now. Yeah. I mean, it's still...
Well, he's no longer there to help them, that's the thing.
It's true.
I don't know. I'm just saying that for a while with Portsmouth, he was doing pretty well. And understandably, once the 11-point penalty came in, I thought that he in many ways redeemed himself with his work at Portsmouth. But you don't agree? That's fine. Bolton, Birmingham, they drew. Wolves, Newcastle. Their spot of Barton baiting ended 1-1. And well done to Joey Barton, as all media outlets are currently saying, for not losing his rag. Blackpool got a point in their first ever home game, 2-2 with Fulham. Widespread enthusiasm.
I was just amazed to see Luke Varney scoring in the Premier League.
Did he score?
He couldn't just
him from Derby.
Barely get into the Derby team, loaned out to Blackpool for the rest of the season. To see him scoring, it shut me up, that's for sure.
Hmm. And Villa beat Everton. No Stephen Ireland for Villa. How long is he going to be out for?
He injured himself in the warm-up
to
yesterday's game, so I'm not sure just yet. But yeah, I think the off-field scenario at Villa is still the most interesting aspect of that, really. That Villa released a statement last night saying they're looking for a manager with proven Premier League experience, which would therefore rule out A, Kevin McDonald, and B, Bob Bradley as well.
Well, Kevin McDonald's kind of ruled himself out.
And in.
Well, yesterday's comments, he seemed pretty clear on the fact that the best thing for the team would be to have a new manager.
I don't think Villa would be looking at him anyway at the moment, to be honest. In terms of other managers to come in with that kind of experience, it'd be interesting. Well, obviously, Alan Kirbishley is going to be mentioned, I suspect, as he always is with every single job.
And Martin O'Neill's available.
He's quite good. There were 7 people linked over the weekend with the Villa job, I wrote down. Cardiff's Dave Jones, who has a very small amount of Premier League experience with Wolves, I suppose. Gerard Houllier, Martin Yol, Jurgen Klinsmann, Gareth Southgate, Bob Bradley and Ronald Koeman.
Ajax must be fed up of everybody being linked with their manager who, you know, they successfully fended off one.
Maybe they're proud.
Before. Perhaps they are.
But they're top.
Proud.
They're top. They won 5-0 at the weekend, so can't be
affected
too
James
much.
Dot. Yeah.
It's the one thing I read.
The Graafschap.
One final thing. Everton, though, just 1 point from 3 games. I know this is their traditional start to any season, but they do really need a striker. Any word on... or they need to at least settle on someone who's going to put some... They need somebody to score some goals. Anyway.
They played very well yesterday. Mm. They played really well. It was a really good game against Villa, and they should easily at least have got a point. But Bedford is yet to make the step up, and Sahar, they still need to put their chances away if they're going to improve around. But it's already there. It's cost them a lot of points.
Indeed so. That's it for part one. Very, very shortly, we'll start our European roundup. Now, Raphael Honigstein's here in the pod. Time to tackle some of the really big stories from one of Europe's more underrated leagues. Ligue 1, Lyon. Johan Gourcuff making his debut for Lyon against his father's side, Lorient. Interesting that, no?
Why are you looking at me? Yeah. Am I French?
I know. Anyway, well, there you go. The thing in France, just a quick update. Big sides are still struggling. Toulouse are still top. Ironically, really, you know. That's about it. And the curious thing was this business of Gourcuff making his debut for his new side, Lyon, against his father's team, and they lost. And Gourcuff, this time a year ago, everyone was going, wow, Gourcuff, wow. And things have really gone off the ball for him. Anyway, Bundesliga, Raphael, what's been going on there? Now, last time you were in, you said, and I quote, oh, you won't get 6 goals in a Bundesliga
game. 6-0.
All right, 6-0.
That is a crucial difference.
That's the crucial difference, because what happened this weekend?
It was a 6-3. Yeah, it was very even, more even than the score suggested. Gladbach are winning away to Leverkusen. And that result just kind of was in tune with the rest of the results, because there were 7 away wins. Ooh. Wolfsburg, of course, were 3-0 up against Mainz after 30 minutes and still managed to lose home.
Just to call them by their official title, that's Steve McLaren's Wolfsburg.
Absolutely.
Who was 3-0 up at home to Mainz and then lost 4-3. And Michael Ballack's Bayer Leverkusen, who'd been off to a brilliant start to the season. Mm. Yeah,
they were slaughtered, basically. They played pretty well, but then every single time Gladbach attacked and they went on brilliant counter-attacks, they conceded, and Ballack was substituted after 60 minutes and he really looked shattered. I mean, they run him and the rest of the team completely ragged.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't a good way to finish the week off for him, because he'd just been told that he wasn't going to play for Germany for the next 2 qualifying games. Oh. There is a strong suggestion that rather than telling him officially you're out, you're no longer captain, Löw is just going to prolong the inevitable decision until no one will clamour for his comeback anymore. So he's really up against it.
It's not a nice way of doing it, though, is it?
No, it's not. But
Wolfsburg, though, some good news for them. They signed Diego. Lovely little player.
Well, it was a brilliant signing for 15 million, because he cost Juventus, of course, 25 million. So, which is more or less what he represents in value, in my view. So they got a 25 million euro player for 10 million less, and he was absolutely brilliant. Together with Dzeko, they were a dream duo. Dzeko scored 2 goals. Diego scored a great goal where he went straight at the keeper and then sort of did a couple of lollipops to put the keeper off and then strolled it into the net. Really beautiful goal. But his comeback was overshadowed by the fact that Wolfsburg still managed to lose, of course, which is something that no Bundesliga team had managed to do after being 3-0 up at home since 1991.
I have to say, Diego made a brilliant start at Juventus a year ago as well, and they won away at Roma, and he looked an utter star. But I think it's a really sad thing for Juve that they let him go like that. Bayern got beaten by newly promoted Kaiserslautern.
Yeah, another huge shock Friday night. Bayern played well, and I think, you know, what John said earlier about Man City might be true for them a little bit, because they missed an absolute sitter through Thomas Müller. It was the best attack of the game. He was through on goal, even closer than Tevez was. He still had the goalkeeper to beat, but he also had two men next to him. So he could have just laid it off or strolled it in. He could have done whatever he wanted to do, but he missed. Somehow, Lautern, who looked fairly defensively solid but didn't really offer much going forward, sort of started believing that it can hurt Bayern. And within 66 crazy seconds, they scored twice.
No way.
To kill off Bayern. And they kept on playing around and creating chances, but it wasn't their day. You know, they weren't beaten for a long, long time last season. But along with Leverkusen, who also lost the second round, they've fallen very early this year.
All right. Let's cheer ourselves up with some posts. Clockwork Ringmaster responds to Gloop, who's saying, I don't know why he's asking for us to talk about the Scottish football scene, because we obviously know nothing about it, etc. Clockwork Ringmaster says, yes, he would like someone in the pod once a month maybe to do a 60-second rundown of the depressingly hilarious cesspool that is the Scottish top flight. Kenny Miller gave another dozen. Should I do my Scottish accent for this? Yeah,
why,
John?
Why not? Yeah.
Kenny Miller gave another dazzling display of his two available... No, let's not. I've ruined this guy. He posted in a Clockwork Ringmaster. I enjoyed your post a lot. By now, I've ruined it. But it was very nice. Insane in the Ukraine, Kakudev says, no mention of turmoil in Ukraine? Question mark. Have you heard about this?
No.
It's all kicking off there. Basically, the national team manager, Miron Markovic, has resigned. Obviously, they're hosting the... European Championship, so that's very much the plan. And basically, he's been indicted in or accused of match fixing when he was back as a club manager, Metalist Kharkiv. You probably recall this unfortunate affair back in 2008. And he's actually said that it's nothing to do with him, it's all the president of the Ukrainian FA, but he's walked out on the national team, etc., etc., etc. Ukraine now without a manager only 2 years before they co-host Euro 2012, and with the head of the FA who's been implicated in a match fixing scandal. Only in football, eh? Oh, no, there is... yeah, OK, fair enough. The Football League. We've got both John Ashton and James Dart here. You know, lay it on us. Championship, QPR, got held this weekend, no? Ipswich and Cardiff continued the...
Not quite held. Well, they were held, I guess, to a draw, but, I mean, they scored twice in injury time.
Oh, did they?
At Derby to salvage quite the important point, really. A game that I think many fans thought they would have rolled over and lost last season.
Are they still on top?
They are, only on goal difference, because Cardiff won again, and so they're now level with them, as are Ipswich.
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? So Ipswich, this time, have really got off to a flying start.
They have. I mean, they were only beating Bristol City at the moment, and Bristol City are having an absolute shocker to shocking start of the season. But it's an interesting look at the bottom end of the table. You've got Portsmouth, Leicester, Preston, Forest, Hull, the mighty Sheffield United and Middlesbrough. Some big teams down the bottom end. Okay, we're only four games in, but
right.
I think QPR and Cardiff are going to be two tough ones to dislodge at the moment.
Was it another Bellamy success story or what?
It was more the support package, really. I think Jay Bothroyd again looked very lively, and I mean, they won at Portsmouth and Pompey in real trouble.
Right. Former Perugia striker Jay Bothroyd, excellent. Meanwhile, in League One, I see Alan Pardew has got the bullet at Southampton.
Yeah, this morning, after on the back of his 4-0 win, I think it was away at Bristol Rovers over the weekend. Strange decision, this, and the fans seem to be extremely confused about the timing of it and why exactly he has gone. And
why has he gone?
Well, it's hard to say. Southampton released a statement this morning, let's see if I can find it, which had this strange phrase in it. Following a review of the current status in and around the first team, the club has decided that to achieve its well-known targets, it is essential to make changes to the first team management and coaching, which is just it's a very strange sort of mealy-mouthed way of putting it. The suggestion is that Nicola Cortesi, the Italian chairman of the club...
I wouldn't have guessed you might be
because of the accent on,
yeah.
..has plans to bring in a manager, possibly from Italy. I think AC Milan tried to take Cortesi to the San Siro at some point. Last season, he was linked with a move there, I think, in January, some sort of high up position. This was reported back in back in January, and so he does have links with Italian football, and there is a suggestion that they could be looking for an overseas glamour name to take them forward.
Obviously, it's been a whole season of...
Or Alan Kerbishley.
Possibly,
yeah. Yeah, it's been a whole season of unrest already, obviously, with the sad death of their owner, Marcus Lieber. But, I mean, I think ever since a lot of money came into Southampton, sort of just over, what, over a year, 18 months or so ago, there's been it's been a hot seat, and there's been a lot of speculation as to Pardew's future. And I think the timing is a bit strange, obviously, four games in, and after they lost on the opening day, that would have been almost more likely, even one game into the season. But that's five managers gone by the end of August, which is in both the Premier League and Football League. Some quick movers, but not as quick as in Serie A this weekend.
Yeah, that's right. Bologna, before a ball was even kicked, well, with Inter coming, they thought they'd just get... They prepare for the inevitable disaster by just getting rid of the manager early. Yes, well, we'll discuss that in a second or two in our little Serie A roundup. We'll also get the latest from the Liga 2. Before that, let me just say goodbye, Raphael Honigstein, because you're off to Austria now. Yes.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, then. Excellent. Well, I'm sure you'll do a fine job there, as you have here, and many, many thanks for your input. That's it for part two. We'll be back with Serie A and the Liga after this. Now, one of the biggest stories in Europe since last we spoke was Ibrahimovic, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, moving from Barcelona to Milan. Zlatan Ibrahimovic, who was part of a very controversial transfer last summer when Barcelona signed him in a move worth an estimated, 70, 75, 80 million euros, part of that represented by Samuel Eto'o. They got him from Inter. Eto went to Inter, promptly won the Champions League. And Ibra, well, he didn't do badly for Barcelona, but he didn't prove a key player, let's put it that way, in their Spanish title. And now Barcelona have offloaded him on a season's loan with then a chance to buy for 24 million euros. So something of a hefty loss they're making there, to Milan. Is he going to be this year's Wesley Sneijder? He said, mentioning another controversial transfer.
It would be interesting. I think Ibrahimovic has won the title in the country where he's been for the last seven seasons in a row, I believe. So, I don't know. I think Barca have upgraded at a cost, at a loss. And at the same time, I think Milan will be delighted to have him on.
Not everyone at Milan is delighted about it. Boriello has been grumbling about it. And one of the kind of last-minute transfer moves that may go through, I think, is Marco Boriello moving away. But bizarrely, there's this notion on some of the Italian websites that he might go to Man City in exchange for Robinho. So at Milan, you would have Ronaldinho, Robinho and Ibrahimovic playing, or potentially playing together up front. Just watch them track back together.
Pato?
And Pato as well, yeah. Pato, who started off this weekend with Ibrahimovic in the stands. There was all sorts of euphoria in Milan because this move had been going on for a while. Galliani basically went and stayed in Barcelona. They had a friendly with Barcelona, but he stayed on the weekend and he was telling reporters, go and buy fresh underwear. We're staying here until this deal goes through. But nobody thought a Milan team who basically have been scratching around for loan deals here and there would be able to land a player who had cost Barcelona so much for so little. But that's what they've done. As I say, 24 million, which they'll be able to split over 3 years, euros. Anyway, it was a brilliant opening weekend for Milan all round because not only did they... win and go top of the table, but Juventus lost, and Roma, the other big potential rival for Inter, were held goalless in their season opener with newly promoted Cesena. Juventus, not only did they lose, but they seem to be in pretty much the same confused state that they were in last year. They've lost Diego, as we mentioned. They brought in Fabio Quagliarella from Napoli, who got a very fortuitous 1-1 draw at Fiorentina. And the headline regarding their 1-0 defeat at Bari, Juve, was who's going to do the thinking? Who's going to do the scoring? So still very much a work in progress, despite the arrival of Gigi Del Neri. There was no sign of his kind of famed wing play with which he was so successful at Chievo. That was much more what Bari were up to, indeed. And the talk is that they may still be in the market for another signing up front, because it still does look like they need a big goal scorer up front. Quagliarella, a scorer of fine goals, but not necessarily the most consistent striker in the world. Possibly a move for Boriello to come there before Tuesday evening. In other news, Sampdoria beat Lazio. Fiorentina, as I say, were very unlucky to draw 1-1 at home to Napoli. Inter, whose first official game under Rafa Benitez's stewardship was the less than successful European Super Cup last Friday, which they lost 2-0 to Atletico Madrid. Benitez, again worryingly, saying this team has won too many trophies. As an explanation of that defeat. But they are up against Bologna, who have prepared for their likely defeat by sacking their manager already, Franco Colombo, getting the boot before their season even began. Apparently, he didn't share the club's outlook on the kind of players they should be using. And there's talk of Beretta, the former Siena and Parma manager, coming in there. Possibly Alberto Malazzani, who equally is a former Siena and Parma manager. That's obviously the very much the requirement there. Finally, on the Italian front, quick mention for Parma, who opened up their campaign with a 2-0 victory over Brescia. Everybody loves Parma, certainly the posters do. They finished last season up in eighth, so it was very impressive. They signed on loan that fellow Giovinco from Juventus. And we were a bit disparaging. I was a bit disparaging about him last week on the pod. I have to say, he was absolutely sensational, particularly in the first half in this game against Brescia. It was a bit like Zola was back at the Tardini. It was, you know, all little looping passes here, slaloms there, shots the other. And Gazzetta, their correspondent, was basically creaming his trousers over him, saying, "Little boys, do you hope to play football? Study this man and try and imitate him." So it was very much that kind of thing. Anyway, great win for Parma, and nice to see a young and creative player, Italian player, getting his chance to shine. OK, well, to finish off then today on Football Weekly, it is Sid Lowe in Spain. Hello, Sid.
Hi, James. How are you?
Very, very well. You just come back from Mallorca.
Yeah, the Mallorca to Madrid flight really, really, really gets on my nerves. And it's always the same, because you can never get your bags on, because everyone's bought these bloody Ensaimada things, which are like a kind of a big circular cake. And everyone buys hundreds of them. The overhead compartment's just completely full of sodding cakes. Mm. So everyone's sitting there with their legs crushed by their bags. It happens every time. It drives me mad.
That sounds rotten.
But you can buy them in Madrid. I don't know why people feel the need to buy hundreds of them and bring them back.
I don't know. Real Madrid didn't come back with very much from their trip to Mallorca, did they, Sid?
Well, some of the players brought them back as well. I could see they were leaving the stadium carrying great big packets of these things. No, they didn't bring very much back. Just, you know, after the game was quite interesting. I thought he said a couple of very good things, and one of them that was significant was that he said that, you know, we're only going to play Barcelona twice this season. All this talk of Madrid not being as good as Barcelona sort of doesn't matter, because, of course, Madrid still are so good that they're all good enough, rather, that they'll win all their other games. Except, of course, that last night they weren't. And it's a problem for Real Madrid, because they're now 2 points behind Barcelona, having drawn 0-0 with Mallorca. And all right, you'd say, well, it's only the first week of the season, it's very early. Of course it is. It's ridiculously early to be making any serious conclusions. But 2 points dropped this early is significant, when you bear in mind Barcelona only dropped 15 points in the whole of last season.
What's the reaction been like there in the press? I remember how much they got on Capello's back when his Madrid team weren't entertaining them the way they thought they ought to be in Madrid. And now Mourinho, after a poor pre-season, kicking off with a 0-0 in Mallorca. What's been the verdict there tactically?
Well, you're right. Capello's the key word. That there is a fear that Jose Mourinho's side won't be particularly exciting. That's one of the things that the few critics that there are, a few doubters anyway, have been putting forward in the Spanish press, that we won't enjoy watching them play. I think, though, what you do need to do is you need to look at the politics behind all of this. Manuel Pellegrini was slaughtered, despite the fact that Real Madrid scored 102 goals in the league. People said it wasn't good enough. But that's partly because they were enabled to do that by the fact that the political situation meant that basically he was an easy target, Manuel Pellegrini, an easy person to go for. And so everybody did. There's one way of looking at this as well, which I think is significant, is that Madrid haven't played particularly well in pre-season either. And in a way, what they did last night was similar to what they've done in most of their pre-season games. And yet they did win all of their pre-season games. So Marca, the best-selling newspaper in the country, and of course very, very pro-Madrid, and I think with a little red phone on its desk that goes directly through to a certain office at the Bernabeu, they ran a story saying that Real Madrid were the pre-season champions, which I thought was great. I don't know if they got a trophy for that or not. And that everything was going to be fine, and Mourinho had proven that he was born to coach Real Madrid and they were going to be great. Now, of course, they've got to explain this away today, and they're saying that it's very early and that they're going to give him time. But I think it is something that will concern people if this carries on for a while. And if you looked at Madrid last night, I'm not sure it was tactical mistake so much as it just not quite right. There's not really the fluidity. They're falling into some of the traps that they fell into last year, although, as I say, and it's worth insisting on this, 102 goals last year. They were looking for Cristiano Ronaldo very early. He tended to try and do it all on his own a lot of the time. Higuain was misfiring. What Mourinho has been saying for the last couple of weeks is he needs a number nine, and some of the press is supporting him in that now.
All right. Just on the subject of Ronaldo, before you tell us who that number nine might be, the word seems to be that he might be out for a couple of weeks with that ankle knock that he took.
Yeah, we're waiting for some sort of answer on that today. When Real Madrid left the stadium last night, and I must confess I wasn't aware of this at first, because I come down from doing the match report listening to the coaches, and I was just tidying up the the end of the match report, and on my way out the stadium, and a couple of people saying, oh God, we've just spoken to the doctors, and they're not optimistic about this. They think that this potentially is a recurrence of what he had last year, which kept him out for about 6, 7, or 8 weeks, I think, something like that. And obviously put a real dent in his first season, although it was still a very, very good first season indeed from Ronaldo. So that will concern them. Of course, what that might do is quicken the wheels if they were to buy a striker. But Jorge Valdano, the club's director general, has said lots and lots of times that the squad is closed. That's it. There won't be any more purchases. Mourinho, they keep on tightening the screw ever so slightly.
On to our final thing then. And Barcelona, a year after putting together a package worth, what, 70, 80 million euros for Ibrahimovic, then take a massive loss on him to send him out on loan to Milan. What's behind this, Sid?
Well, there's so many places to pick this up, and I think one of the first things to say is, as you say, this is massive, and I really am not exaggerating, or at least I hope I'm not exaggerating too much to say this was the story of the weekend until Madrid were held to a draw on Sunday night. This completely overshadowed the first day of football. It was really quite stunning watching the first three games on Saturday night, because the commentators kept cutting off to tell us what the latest news from the Camp Nou was, and we've just seen someone walk into the office, and we think a deal might be close, and it was like, basically, you know, when there's a serial killer hold up in the house. Oh, we think someone just walked past the kitchen window. It was that kind of thing, just from outside the offices at the Camp Nou. I think it's a bizarre situation, as you say. Basically, Barcelona have effectively paid around about 25 or 30 million euros over the last two seasons to give two players to two Milanese clubs. In the first case, Samuel Eto'o. In the second case, Zlatan Ibrahimovic. And I say it like that because, of course, they wanted Villa last year. They couldn't take him. They finally got him this year. So they've got the player they really wanted a year too late. And they've lost a whole load of money into the bargain. Pep Guardiola, in both cases, in the case of Samuel Eto'o and Zlatan Ibrahimovic, decided that he didn't want these players there. And that created a situation in which they had to find a solution. The one thing I suppose I would say in terms of the money is that there's a political side to this as well, which is that, yes, it's true that Barcelona have lost a hell of a lot of cash, but Sandro Rosell, the incoming president, will protect himself and present this as being, well, I didn't lose the money. I made good a very bad situation caused by my predecessor. It's the classic, it was the previous government's fault kind of line. But yeah, extraordinary what Barcelona have lost over this deal. You know, Ibrahimovic was 45 million or 50 million, depending on who you believe, plus the value of Samuel Eto'o, which is officially somewhere in the region of 20 million. There's all sorts of different figures thrown around. What Barcelona have done, and I absolutely love this, they've presented this as, no, we've saved 60 million in Zlatan's wages over the next 4 years, 15 million euros a year, and we've got 24 million back. So in fact, we've made 84 million a year. But what about the money you spent to get him last year? And what about the money you just spent to get Villa?
And this from a club that just needed £125 million worth in loans, what, just to keep the business running, yeah?
Yes, exactly. And I think what that does do, and I suppose in a way, this is a very much a grey area, but I suppose in a way you could almost applaud Barcelona and say, well, a purely footballing decision has taken precedence over the financial state of the club, because Pep Guardiola said to the club, get rid of this player for me.
So he must really hate him.
Well, I find this so very, very strange, because, yes, he must really hate him, and Zlatan has been very publicly talking about how...
Was he jealous about Piqué? Is that what this is about?
I think you need to be careful, James, or Zlatan right. will tell your wife to come round his house and see
with
how gay
sister.
He may or may not be. With her sister, of course, yeah. it's very bizarre, this, because just like last year, Pep Guardiola clearly has taken, for whatever reason, a disliking to a player, made a hell of an effort to get rid of them, and not really clarified properly exactly what it is that he doesn't like about him. Now, someone said to me the other day, in very simple terms, Zlatan thinks he's Messi and he's not. Well, that's true, but he wouldn't be the first footballer to think that he's better than he really is. That's not necessarily a problem. And bear in mind that Eto'o, who Pep Guardiola tried to get rid of, had just won a treble, went away and won another treble. So there is a question mark about Guardiola there. There's also a question mark, and I must admit, I'm a little dubious about this. I don't know to what extent this might be partly fake, in that Barcelona got to a situation where they thought, well, we've got Villa now. Bojan played better at the back end of last season than we expected. We need to get rid of this guy. It's not really happening. Let's play bad guys. Let's play tough cop to try and force him out. So I wonder how much of this has been partly hammed up by both sides, and the ongoing comments from Zlatan's agent have been absolutely hilarious. Zlatan himself was hilarious when he came out on Saturday night and said, well, I don't know what Guardiola's problem is with me. Every time I walk into a room, he walks out. Maybe he's scared of me. of course, you look at Zlatan and you can see why. Can't
yeah, indeed. So it'll be interesting to see what he does at Milan. As I was mentioning before, the hope very much there is that he turns out to be this year's Wesley Snyder. Sid, brilliant.
Well, I'll tell you what, he's made the Champions League draw a hell of a lot more interesting, hasn't he? Because Real Madrid AC Milan now, that suddenly looks really quite tasty.
Yeah, absolutely. Very good, Sid. Listen, we look forward to speaking to you then on Thursday. Presumably Spain are heading into a couple of big European qualifiers, are they?
Do you count Liechtenstein as big?
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
They are heading into a European qualifier.
All right, no easy games at this level, etc., etc. Many, many thanks then, Sid Lowe.
My pleasure. Cheers, James.
Well, excellent stuff. That is it then for today's Football Weekly. We'll be back on Thursday as ever. Looking forward to a busy programme of European qualifiers and international football. In the meantime, our thanks to Raphael Honigstein, who's off in Salzburg probably by now, and to John Ashton, who's not.
Yeah, no problem. I'm still here.
Excellent. And to you too, James Dark.
Thank you, James.
And to Ian, our producer, and you, the listener. Hope you have a nice week, and we'll see you on Thursday.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.